He was coming down off his adrenaline high and needed to walk around a bit.
I better go check on Twingo anyway.
Dietz's head snapped around at that.
Please tell me you're joking, he said with genuine rancor, startling Jason.
No, I'm not joking. He was injured by being in the wrong place at the wrong time. More to the point, he was injured because of his proximity to us. I was not going to let him lie out there and die.
Jason pushed back just as hard. Dietz stared at him for a long moment before continuing in a soft voice that unsettled Jason more than the initial outburst.
Fine. It's not like we can do anything about it now, anyway. He can catch a ride back to Breaker's World once we reach Pinnacle Station. Now go check and make sure he's not getting into anything, and please return that weapon to the armory. Your own rifle did enough damage, but that thing will penetrate the hull from the inside.
Dietz rose and walked over to another station on the bridge, indicating an end to the conversation. Twingo was still unconscious when Jason entered the infirmary, but the computer assured him that the damage to his body had been repaired and there was no sign of brain injury. Apparently, one of the energy bolts fired by the ground car had hit the engineer's vehicle and sent shrapnel into his side. Luckily, none had penetrated too deeply. Jason sat with him for a bit in case he woke up, but his restlessness got the best of him, so he left instructions with the computer on what to tell the alien if he awoke while he was gone, and then headed down to the armory to secure his weapon. He laid the railgun on the bench and set about removing his body armor and then stripped his uniform off. Any sense of modesty that may have remained after his time in the military seemed irrelevant on a ship with only a sex-neutral machine and an alien of unknown species for companions. Now nude, he moved back to the workbench and popped the ammo magazine out of the railgun. Simple enough, it worked the same as any M4, but the lack of a charging handle gave him pause. How would he remove the round in the chamber? And did he even need to? After asking the computer for help, he was told that with the magazine removed, the capacitors couldn't charge and the weapon couldn't fire.
Good enough for me.
He laid it in the holding fixture it had been in when he had first walked into the armory, and was about to turn to leave when something caught his eye. In a plastic bin was a pile of parts that had, without a doubt, once been his trusty AR-15 carbine. Sifting through the parts, he saw that it was torn down completely. Even the lower receiver had been stripped down to its individual little springs, pins, and levers.
That son of a bitch! Jason was fuming.
He assumed Dietz had torn the carbine down in order to copy it for his new railgun. A fair trade, to be sure, but having the AR ripped apart without permission felt like an affront. He rolled his eyes in disgust and resignation, walking out of the armory and back towards his quarters to shower and dress as he smelled of sweat and whatever chemicals had inundated the equipment Twingo and his associates had been using. After another misty steam jet shower and a fresh set of clothes, Jason felt quite a bit better. They'd made the transition to slipspace while he had been cleaning up, so he went to the galley and grabbed a quick meal before checking on Twingo again. Still asleep. He walked from the infirmary out into the cargo bay to see what it was they had picked up on Breaker's World. There were pallets of sealed cylinders, not unlike oil drums, covering much of the cargo bay floor. There were no labels on the containers or inventories posted on the pallets, and so far as he knew, they'd never received a manifest. His contemplation of the cargo was interrupted by the computer.
Commander Burke, passenger Twingo has awoken and is requesting your presence. He is also demanding that the restraints be removed.
Tell him I'm on my way, Jason said, as he jogged up the stairs leading out of the cargo bay. Remove the restraints on the bed, but keep the infirmary door locked until I arrive.
Acknowledged.
The computer confirmed his orders as he rushed back up to the medical bay. When he came up to the transparent sliding door of the infirmary,
He could see that Twingo was sitting up on the bed, obviously still in significant pain, and appearing quite agitated.
Jason, why was I strapped down to this bed?
He was holding his side where the shrapnel had penetrated.
What happened?
You don't remember? We were attacked on the ramp. From what I could tell, your vehicle was hit and it sent metal shards into you. I couldn't tell how bad you were injured, so I grabbed you and brought you on board to be treated.
So I take it we're not on Breaker's World anymore?
When Jason shook his head in the negative, Twingo continued.
This isn't good. I assume you and that synth are into a less than legal endeavor. And now I've gotten pulled into it. Do you know who you were attacked by?
No, I have no idea, Jason admitted.
Honestly, I'm new to this whole thing. A few days ago, I was completely unaware there was even life in the universe outside my home planet.
Twingo looked dubious at that claim as he eyed Jason up and down.
I'll admit I've never seen your species around before, but that isn't saying much. For the sake of argument, let's assume I believe you're telling me the truth, which I don't. You should know that there are more than a few criminal organizations that call Breaker's World home, and anyone that would so brazenly attack this ship at a public spaceport is almost certainly of that ilk. But I'll explain all that later. First, I'd like something to eat, and then you can explain to me how, after only a few days in space, you found yourself in possession of such an expensive warship and in running gunfights with criminal cartels.
Wincing with pain as he slipped to the floor, he padded out of the infirmary and towards the galley, obviously familiar with the Jepson's layout. Over the next few hours, Twingo ate heartily in the ship's galley while Jason explained what he had unwittingly gotten himself into. Nursing a mug of Trout, he told of how he had first spotted the damaged ship on Earth and had boarded it, trapping himself in the cargo hold. Twingo seemed to take the tale at face value after some convincing, and offered some insight on why Dietz had likely kept him on board and hadn't returned him immediately, or simply cycled him out an airlock.
You see, he was saying, synths aren't widely recognized as free-thinking beings in a lot of the galaxy, or at least this corner of it. They were created much for the same reason any machine would be. To help out their creators with menial labor or monotonous tasks. In the usual fashion, their creations got away from them as they became smarter with each generation until, finally, they demanded independence. The species that created them is a soft-hearted bunch, so with zero bloodshed, they declared their synthetic offspring to be free, sentient beings. This was accepted by some governments, but, by and large, they aren't recognized as anything other than machines. There are many different flavors of synths. Your Dietz appears to be a standard administrative variety. He's slick-talking and good at organizing and structuring deals. A lot of high rollers like to keep them around to crunch numbers and read through contracts. What I find most curious, if you don't mind my saying, is how he was on this ship alone when you stumbled upon it.
He never really did say, Jason said between sips. I assumed he had escaped some battle after seeing how badly damaged this ship was when I found it. The computer wasn't able to tell me anything other than the original crew never reboarded.
Twingo murmured, noncommittally. Well, keep this little nugget of wisdom in mind while you're dealing with them. They may be machines, but they very much have free will and desires. Whatever his motivations may be in using you to spearhead his dealings may be nothing more underhanded than needing an organic being to sign invoices and contracts. Or he could be setting you up for a big fall. No way to know for sure, but some of the most notorious and ruthless serial criminals have been synthetics. I sometimes think this is born out of the frustration of never being able to attain a status more than that of a piece of equipment.
Jason sat silently as he contemplated what it was Dietz may have in store for him, if anything. For all he knew, the damn thing would leave him stranded once he outlived his usefulness. He unconsciously adjusted the translator earpiece. Twingo noticed this and cocked his head.
You know, I'm assuming you'll be getting a cut of whatever deal you guys are cooking up. You should really get at least a translator implant. Personally, I'd go for the works. Computer interface, optical implants, everything.
I'm not sure how comfortable I'd be with that,
Jason said as he squirmed at the idea of having alien devices surgically implanted in his body.
Oh, it's painless. Well, mostly. It's all nanotech stuff. The little buggers are injected into your bloodstream and they'll travel to where they need to be and assemble into the proper configuration and begin interfacing with your nervous system. Takes them about a day to get everything all sorted out.
Jason marveled at how Twingo's speech through the translator had been constantly evolving as they conversed. While stilted and basic at first, abstract concepts and even Earth colloquialisms were now coming through the little device in real time. Twingo finished off his last bite before asking,
"So, where are we headed anyway?"
"Pinnacle Station, whatever that is."
"Pinnacle is a major commerce hub," Twingo said after a low whistle. "But it's fairly far up the spiral arm. Although in a ship like this, that's not much of an issue. It makes sense, though. If you want to offload some illicit cargo discreetly, that's the place to do it."
"So you're convinced we're hauling something illegal?"
It wasn't a question.
"You're not? I mean, come on. I'm as naive as the next person, but not a whole lot of what's happened makes sense for a simple, durable goods delivery."
Twingo stood and slowly twisted to stretch his core out, wincing again at the pain of his injuries.
"If you don't mind, I'm going to head to bed for a bit and heal up some more. The medical nanites the ship injected me with are itching like crazy. I assume you're in the captain's stateroom, so I'll just grab the chief engineer's bunk. Have the ship wake me up if anything exciting happens."
The last part was said over his shoulder as he was already heading through the hatchway that led to the engineering spaces. After Twingo left, Jason sat in the galley for a while longer, alone with his thoughts. The thrill and excitement of being on a spaceship had dulled a bit, and he began to contemplate the kind of trouble he would be in if they were indeed carrying illegal cargo and happened to get caught. What would happen to him? A human alone in the galaxy with no legal representation and certainly no consulate to contact. He could be in some seriously deep shit. With a heavy sigh, he stood and slid the mug down the counter closer to where he knew the cleaning robot would emerge after he left. Whatever it was, he was in it up to his neck. He hoped he would be able to make it through as an innocent bystander and not an accomplice. He knew that blasting the ground car on Breaker's world made him anything but innocent, but he was hoping that wouldn't be an issue later on. Deciding Twingo had the right idea, he walked off towards his quarters for some sleep after telling the computer to wake him up in 4 hours.
Chapter 10. The DL-7 emerged into real space with nothing but a brief flash of dissipating slip energy to mark its arrival. Her crew, numbering 3 for the moment, looked over the displays to ensure they were where they were supposed to be. Dietz, still piloting the ship with Jason riding shotgun, guided them onto a course that would allow them to intercept Pinnacle Station as it orbited the system's primary star, its path trailing behind the fourth planet. The gunship had the power to take a direct route to the station, but blending in with the commercial traffic was the name of the game, so a leisurely intercept arc down the gravity well was in order.
"We've got about a 2-hour flight," Twingo said from the station on the bridge that allowed him to monitor engineering remotely.
Apparently, he had decided he would make himself useful during his unintended flight, and had been going around tweaking and adjusting systems on the ship until they were humming along at peak efficiency.
"Plenty of time for me to make contact with our clients," Dietz said as he rose. Turning to Jason, he said, "The computer will fly us in pretty close before the station's docking system takes over. I'll be back well before that, though."
Without waiting for a response, he walked quickly off the bridge. Moments later, Jason heard the door to the communications room close, something that didn't instill him with a lot of confidence. Why close the door? Ignoring the meaningful look from Twingo, he fiddled with the displays at his station to learn as much as he could about this system. It was a little over an hour later when Dietz walked back onto the bridge, his face giving no indication of how the contact call had gone. After a while, a bright speck in front of them began to grow and move against the field of stars and resolve into a defined shape.
"Damn," was all Jason could say as he got his first good look at Pinnacle Station.
"Damn is right,"
Twingo said quietly as he too stared out the canopy.
"First time to the big city, boys?"
Dietz's joke fell flat as nobody even looked his way. He glared at them both and went back to flying the ship. Pinnacle Station had started its life as a military resupply depot for deep space combat ships. When the wars ended and the governments went broke, the station went onto the open market after being decommissioned. Throughout the next few decades, it exchanged hands a half dozen times, and each private owner or corporation built onto the existing station and upgraded systems until it was nearly unrecognizable from its original configuration. With each new addition, the station's orbit had to be kicked out to stabilize it, until it had been settled into a trailing heliocentric orbit behind the system's fourth planet. The gravitational pull of the planet helped anchor the station and allowed its mass to fluctuate as enormous ships docked with and left Pinnacle Station without the need to constantly burn maneuvering thrusters. The lower third of the station was obviously much, much older than the rest, and could only have been the original sections that were still intact. As one moved their gaze up, things became newer and shinier, until it finally reached the crystal-enclosed biosphere that inhabited the top deck. When they were close enough, Jason could see that hundreds of docking arms reached out from the station, and just as many ships were moored to them. No two ships looked alike, and he was awed at the variety, each representing an entirely different methodology and engineering outlook, each representing a different species of origin. The perspective outside shifted as the ship swung down towards the lower half of the station. Jason looked over and noticed that Dietz wasn't controlling the ship. When the synth saw his gaze, he said, "The station operators don't trust pilots to bring their ships in. An automated system syncs up to our helm control and flies us into the appropriate place. It cut down on a lot of mishaps when it was brought online. Think of it like the harbor pilot in your maritime industry."
Jason only had a vague idea what a harbor pilot was, but he'd be damned if he admitted the alien machine knew more about his home planet than he did.
"Ah, of course," he said. "Looks like we're heading to the lower hangar decks,"
Twingo said as he observed their flight path on his display.
"Correct you are. This ship is able to dock to a standard hatch with an expandable cofferdam, but our client has his own hangar and enjoys his privacy,"
Dietz replied without looking over. While he hadn't necessarily been openly rude to the engineer, it was still obvious he wasn't happy about him being there at all. For most of the flight to Pinnacle Station, Dietz had isolated himself on the bridge or in the comm room in an apparent effort to avoid his organic crewmates. The DL-7 slid gracefully towards a section about a third of the way up the hull of the station. Jason could now make out individual openings that he correctly assumed were the hangar bays. There was a slight thump felt throughout the ship, which prompted him to look at Twingo.
"We can't make our final approach with the gravity drive. It screws with station ops. The emitters are shut down and we're riding in on thrusters and inertia," the engineer answered.
Jason assumed he had either misunderstood or missed entirely how the ship pushed itself through real space, since he thought only the slip drive utilized gravity manipulation. He'd have to remember to ask Twingo about that when they got a moment alone. He looked at the lowermost sections of Pinnacle and eyed the aged pitted metal of the original hulk skeptically.
"Not much for maintenance down here."
It also looked as if it was covered in a thick layer of grime that reminded him of blacktop tar. Soon, though, all he could make out was the lit opening they were heading into as Dietz cycled the landing gear down in preparation for a landing inside the hangar. The ship passed effortlessly through the force field that held the atmosphere of the hangar in place and immediately started hissing and popping in the warm air. After touching down, it spun on its Y-axis like a top, the rear wheels of the main gear able to roll sideways as well as forwards and backwards. It continued its rotation until its nose was pointed back out towards space and the rear cargo ramp was facing inward. "Let's go," Dietz said simply as he placed all essential systems into a standby mode.
"Should I be armed?" Jason asked as he followed the synth off the bridge.
"No,"
Dietz and Twingo said simultaneously, the effect odd through the translator in his ear. Dietz continued with a sidelong glance at Jason.
"I wouldn't suggest it, and not just because station security would frown upon it."
This seemed to confirm, at least in Jason's mind, that whatever they were doing wasn't exactly above board. They walked in silence the rest of the way to the cargo hold and stopped as Dietz lowered the ramp and opened the internal pressure doors. Again, Jason was assaulted by an entirely new variety of strange, unpleasant ambient smells and wondered if anyone ever really got used to it. The unlikely trio walked down the ramp and were greeted by a tall, very thin humanoid with olive skin and muted facial features. No prominent nose or ears. The eyes, however, were very green and very bright, nearly incandescent in the hangar's floodlights.
"Dietz!"
Its voice was low and sibilant, exaggerating the S sound greatly. It also spoke with an obvious disdain for the synth.
"So where exactly is Klagsch?"
Dietz looked nervously from the speaker to the two armed figures of the same species behind it before answering.
"There were some complications on the last run. The crew never made it back to the ship. I made a run for it and still took some heavy damage, but we had stashed your property before leaving Breaker's World, so it was safe and sound during all the unpleasantness."
Dietz was talking very fast now in the alien's native language. Luckily, Jason's translator kept him up to speed.
"With the captain gone, I had no way to get it back out of storage, so I enlisted this human," he gestured towards Jason, "to help me sign it out and bring it straight here. I know we're late, Bondras, but you have to believe that I was trying to get here as soon as I could."
"I don't have to believe anything," Bondras said, with venom in his voice.
He gestured to the two behind him.
"Go check it out and let me know what you find."
While he spoke, he never took his eyes off the DL-7 crew and seemed especially interested in Jason. The guards immediately jogged up the ramp and began scanning the barrels in front of him, but he had also seen Twingo's reaction when Dietz had called him by name. It was the same reaction Jason would have had if he had been hitchhiking and found himself standing in John Gotti's garage facing the Don himself with two of his goons behind him. For the first time since boarding the gunship in that clearing, Jason began to think that it wasn't likely he would actually survive this little adventure. He was actually grateful when he heard the two armed beings marching back down the ramp, if for no other reason than to interrupt the uncomfortable silence between them and the imposing Bondras. The pair went straight to their boss, and one whispered quietly in his ear as he continued to stare blankly at the trio, his face belying no emotion. Suddenly, his face broke into a huge, oily smile, exposing his short, pointed teeth.
"It seems all is in order. I'll admit I had my doubts."
He walked over and put an arm around Jason and Dietz, the latter involuntarily flinching away slightly at the gesture.
"But you understand that, don't you, Dietz? After all, you guys disappeared with my cargo at the pickup, and it's taken all this time for you to bring it back here. I half expected the containers to be full of sand."
With gentle pressure, Bondras was leading them away from the ramp.
"But now all is well, and you've shown yourselves to be stand-up guys. We could maybe talk about some business later. Don't go anywhere."
The last sentence was most definitely not a suggestion. The tall alien removed his arms and strode away towards the exit, his two guards falling into formation behind him. Jason was slightly confused as a work crew seemed to materialize out of nowhere and began unloading the cargo hold using some sort of hovering sleds. And another alien, the same species as Bondras apparently, albeit much shorter, appeared in front of him with a tablet computer.
As you'll see here, Bondras has graciously agreed to pay 90% of the original contract. Most generous, considering how late you've been. If you'll please place your imprint here,
he indicated to another highlighted circle on the screen. Jason looked to Dietz, who nodded almost imperceptibly, and pressed his thumb into the circle. The tablet beeped, and the alien looked at the screen and frowned.
I've never heard of a human? Interesting. No matter, though, your bioprint matches the ship's record. Payment is being transferred to the DL-7's treasury as we speak. Once the cargo is unloaded, you're free to reboard and grab your personal belongings. Bondras has arranged for a suite to be made available for you and will notify you shortly if he has further use for you. If not, you'll be cleared to leave.
The officious being spun around on his heels and marched out of the hangar, leaving Twingo and Jason both apprehensive and relieved. Dietz, on the other hand, looked only relieved. It took the crew another 20 minutes or so to clear out the gunship and spirit away the cargo. During that time, Jason walked over to lean against the nose landing gear and stare out of the gaping hangar opening into space. Intellectually, he knew there was a force field holding the atmosphere in the hangar, but part of him was still quite leery of the hard vacuum that was just a few yards away. Once the ground crew left, he walked up the ramp and into the middle of an argument between Twingo and Dietz.
This has nothing to do with me. I'm booking the first flight back home, and you're going to pay for it.
You know exactly who that was out there. Do you really think he'd make the distinction between you wanting to be here or not? As far as he and I is concerned, nobody is leaving until he says otherwise. Believe me, I'd like nothing better than to dump you right here and now. The fact you're on board was not my choice. The fact Bondras has told all of us to stay, including you, is also not my choice.
Dietz's voice remained calm, but the steel in his demeanor indicated that he meant to back up what he said.
Look here, you chunk of scrap metal. I don't give a leap what you've got cooked up with whichever crime lord you're dumb enough to have dealings with. I'm not bound to any of it, and I'm leaving.
Enough!
Jason's shout froze both of them, just as Dietz looked like he was winding up for another long-winded retort.
Dietz, with the money this job paid, do you agree to send Twingo back to Breaker's World on the first available transport?
He waited for the synth to nod his assent.
Thank you. Twingo, would you agree to this with the condition you wait for a bit to see what's what with this Bondras character? I know you'd rather leave, but I'd rather you not put us in danger or Mark yourself.
Fine,
Twingo said without conviction. Clearly, he'd much rather be on the first flight away from Pinnacle, but he'd gotten all he was going to get out of the other two.
Okay, that's settled. I suppose we can just grab what we need and head out. I'm guessing that little guy still waiting by the door is going to show us to our rooms.
Jason didn't wait for a response as he headed back to his quarters to grab what few belongings he had to take with him. A change of clothes and the toiletries he'd managed to coax the fabricators into producing. He almost had everything bundled into a neat roll with his change of pants on the outside when there was a soft knock at his door. He walked over and slapped the spot on the wall that would open it. Twingo was standing there with a similar bundle to his own.
May I come in, Jason?
Of course. Something wrong?
Honestly, yes, but I don't think you fully realize it yet.
The engineer came in and sat down in the chair at the desk.
This Bondras is a notoriously bad, bad guy. I don't get a good feeling about staying here any longer than necessary.
I can agree with you there, but I honestly don't think we have much choice at this point. I know I'm a backworld rube to you, but I recognize a gangster when I see one. What do you think he wants with us?
I can't really imagine. My first instinct tells me he's going to want another job done. But he has to know that Dietz is more of a con artist, and you, although trained as a soldier on your own world, are very much out of your element here. He could buy and sell 1,000 of me, so that's certainly not it, Twingo said, pausing as if he wanted to say more.
Go on, Jason prompted.
It may be the ship. While something like this bird isn't necessarily unobtainable, it is a bit of a rare mix of firepower and speed. It would certainly be worth getting rid of 3 nobodies for.
Something tells me you're here because you have an idea on how to prevent that rather than to just give me a warning.
Very perceptive, Twingo smiled. I'd like to use your authority to put some locks in place on the ship's computer. Bondras's people would correctly assume Dietz has been in command of the vessel. But when you were named first officer, you automatically outranked him as far as the computer was concerned. I'm not sure that he realized that when he gave you such a high rank. The locks, that only you can control, could be used as leverage for anyone who would want to take the ship, be that Bondras or Dietz.
The last part surprised Jason somewhat. He hadn't realized just how deep Twingo's distrust of Dietz was. While the synth was supremely annoying, and he shared some of those misgivings, he didn't think he would deliberately put them in danger or run out on them at this point. Okay, tell me what to do, Jason said as he sat down on the foot of the bed. Over the next 5 minutes, Twingo talked him through the commands he needed to give the computer to gain access to the security protocols and safeguard them so only he could rescind them. Once finished, they grabbed their gear and headed back towards the cargo bay where they found a very impatient synth waiting for them.
Where have you two been? You only have 1 change of clothes to your names.
What? Jason asked as he walked by. We have a schedule to meet or something?
Dietz rolled his eyes and activated the security lockup, unwittingly triggering Jason's new subroutine, and walked down the ramp before it could raise and lock. The concierge, who had been waiting patiently by the hangar access hatch, led them through the bowels of the lower station, his impeccable clothes clashing with the grimy surroundings. They arrived at a set of lift doors and were ushered inside. They rode the lift further and further until even Dietz's brow shot up as they traversed into the extremely posh upper decks of Pinnacle Station. The doors finally opened, and they walked out into an opulent passageway, still following the concierge until they reached an open hatchway. Walking inside, they were momentarily stunned by how well appointed their temporary quarters were. Jason was the first to speak.
We're being buttered up for something. This can't be cheap.
This is one of many suites Mr. Bondras keeps on retainer for clients who may be passing through.
It was the first time the concierge had spoken since they had exited the hangar.
If there won't be anything else, sirs, I'll leave you now. If you're needed, someone will send for you.
He spun and walked out, shutting the hatch behind him.
Anyone want to bet that it's locked? Twingo asked as he sprawled out on the sofa, obviously deciding he might as well take advantage of a little luxury while he could.
Jason walked around the suite and, as on the gunship, was struck at how familiar the furnishings and fixtures were. He said as much.
Why has everything looked like it could have come from my planet? For that matter, why aren't the aliens I've met been all that exotic?
Aliens?
Dietz laughed at him.
Take a look around. You're the most alien being on this station right now.
He laughed again, ignoring Jason's glare.
There's a logical reason for that, Twingo spoke up. For whatever reason, intelligent life seems to evolve along a certain few tracts, mostly. Warm-blooded creatures all tend to be bipedal, with bilateral symmetry once they reach a certain level of evolution. Some have more appendages or specialized sensory organs, but we're all pretty similar. And as such, we tend to congregate together. On some worlds, insectoid life becomes dominant or prime, and those species tend to stick together as well. It's more out of a lack of communication ability than any real prejudice, although some of them are a fright to look at. There's simply no real common ground for us to meet on. Beings like us tend to be more individualistic, while insectoid life is more hive-oriented, with a strong groupthink instinct.
Twingo took a sip of something he had grabbed from the wet bar before continuing. It looked suspiciously like a beer bottle to Jason.
There have been some pretty nasty wars between the two, but for eons there has been a steady peace between us in this part of the galaxy. Well, more or less. We don't really compete for the same resources and aren't motivated by the same factors, so we've learned it's better to just ignore each other. Of course, there are some truly bizarre folks out there, energy beings and whatnot, but you don't get to interact with them all that much if you stick to the established worlds and space lanes.
Another sip.
Any other questions?
Is that a beer?
That's seriously your only question?
Yes.
Okay.
Twingo chuckled, raising his free hand up in mock surrender.
Yes, the cooler is stocked with a few varieties of ales from a couple of different worlds. I'm sure it's similar to what you have on your planet. Fermenting sugar seems to be the first technological leap we all take together.
Jason walked over to the bar, opened the cooler door, and peeked inside. Sure enough, there were familiar bottles lined up, a little smaller than a 12-ounce bottle, and with a different style cap, but beer bottles nonetheless. It can't be all that bad out here if they have beer. Taking a long pull off the bottle, Jason tilted his head back and let the liquid play across his palate. If he closed his eyes and didn't think at it too closely, it really did taste eerily similar to a Harp lager from Ireland back on Earth, with a little more body to it and a slightly sweetish finish. He took another drink and let out a breath. Ah, I really did need that, he said, hoping the work the ship's medical bay had done on him so he could eat would also work its magic with the alien brew. A loud, keening screech startled Jason so badly he spilled some of the beer on his shirt. He wiped at it as he looked for the source of the odd noise. What the hell? He spotted Twingo sitting at a computer terminal, his normally bluish hue now a sickly pallor. He looked so agitated that Jason walked over to see what the issue was. Unfortunately, he couldn't read a single word on the screen. What he could see, however, were the images, and one of the four on the screen was of the gunship in flight over Breaker's World, with its main engines at full power. Another was of Twingo. It looked like a mugshot, so Jason assumed it must have been a photo from his employer or an ID database. "What's it say?" he asked, unable to hold back any longer.
"I'm wanted for questioning in the deaths of three individuals and the escape of a Jepson Arrow DL-7 gunship," Twingo replied simply.
"Well, that's ridiculous. You were an innocent bystander," Jason said, placating his friend. "That should be easy enough to clear up."
"You don't understand!"
Twingo turned on him with an uncharacteristic ferocity.
"Breaker's World is run by the cartels. They know what happened, but they don't care. They want you guys and that ship, but all they have is a positive ID on me."
He placed his head in his hands and started moaning.
"I can't believe this."
Jason didn't know what else to do, so he was surprised when Dietz came forward and placed a hand on Twingo's shoulder.
"Maybe you should try to go lay down for a bit and clear your head. This is obviously about the cargo we were carrying. We can have Bondras's people clear this up with the local cartels on Breaker's World," the synth said, with what seemed to be genuine concern for the little engineer.
Twingo simply nodded and plodded off to one of the rooms without a word. Once the door closed, Dietz turned to Jason.
"That's probably good advice for you, too. I don't really know what's going on, and I'd like to have you rested and alert when we find out."
He looked pointedly at the half-empty bottle.
"I'd really rather not have you intoxicated later."
"Probably not a bad idea," Jason agreed without argument. He left the bottle on the bar and headed towards one of the other empty rooms, intent on a shower and then some sleep. Chapter 11.
Jason awoke some time later, not knowing how long he had slept, to the sound of voices coming from the main room. One was clearly Dietz, and one was clearly not. He stayed still and concentrated, still unable to make out what was being said.
"Son of a bitch," he murmured under his breath,
grabbing the translator earpiece off the table next to the bed. He stuffed it into his right ear, but by the time the little device had booted up, the other unidentified voice had left. Figuring there was no point in lying there any longer, he swung his legs off the bed and stood up, pulling on his shirt. After multiple combat tours, he slept in his pants and boots when he was in an unknown or potentially hostile environment. This counted as both in his book. When Jason walked out into the main living area, he saw Dietz sitting at the computer terminal reading documents at breakneck speed. Twingo was nowhere in sight, likely still sleeping. Dietz looked over at him and gestured to the larger sofa. "A gift for you, from Bondress, or more likely his consigliere. We're invited to dine with him in 3 hours."
"An invitation would indicate we have the option to turn it down," Jason said, as he picked up what looked like two garment bags.
"A poor choice of words, perhaps. I should have said, in 3 hours we will be dining with Bondress at his pleasure. I am assuming there is something along the lines of a job he'd like us to undertake,"
Dietz replied as he turned back to the display.
Jason was about to retort that he wasn't aware there was an us in the equation, but bit back the comment and walked to his room with the larger of the garment bags. The clothing was fairly straightforward: pants, a shirt, and a banded collared jacket that went high up his neck. It was actually more elegantly simple than an earthly suit and tie. What he was amazed and suspicious about was the tailoring. The clothes fit him absolutely perfectly in every way. The neck, inseam, and even the fact that his left shoulder was minutely lower than his right. He assumed he must have been scanned at some point while walking through Pinnacle Station, something his human sensibilities took offense to for some reason. He walked back out of his room a short time later to see that Twingo's door was still shut, but the other garment bag was missing. Dietz was sitting on the sofa watching what must have been a newscast on the largest display he had ever seen. Jason stared for a moment, trying to figure out why a machine would bother sitting on the sofa in the first place. He walked to the bar and grabbed another beer out of the cooler, ignoring the synth's reproachful gaze.
"Screw him. If I'm being forced to go along with this, I'm going to do it relaxed."
He hadn't felt any ill effects from the previous half a beer he had drank, so now it was bottoms up. He apparently wasn't the only one with a case of nerves, as Twingo, emerging from his room resplendent in his new suit, walked straight to the bar without comment and grabbed a bottle of something off the shelf above the counter and poured a liberal amount into a glass. He fired the drink back, winced, and then repeated the process twice more before speaking to his companions.
"How much longer?"
"We've got about an hour and a half," Dietz said.
"Seeing as how we're obviously not being treated like prisoners, do we really need to wait around to be collected by an underling?"
Jason set his empty bottle back on the bar and stared at Dietz.
"I'm not sure I follow you," he replied.
"What I mean is this. Can't we go early and wait for our host? I'd sort of like to get a view of the place before I have Bondress's people watching my every move."
"I know which establishment we're going to, so I suppose it's possible. We could wait in the lounge. I'm certain our movements will be monitored, but what you're suggesting may not be a bad idea."
Dietz switched off the display and rose from the couch.
"So there's really no way I can just stay here?"
Twingo paled visibly now that the meeting with the crime boss went from being a hypothetical event in the future to a reality in the present.
"You know the answer to that,"
Dietz said gently as he walked with Jason towards the door.
"Try and relax a bit, Twingo. If a few peons like us were simply going to be killed, I doubt we'd be getting dinner and gifts. Unless this Bondress is one sick bastard," Jason said, looking at Dietz, who just shrugged noncommittally.
The restaurant they were heading to was three decks below them and along the outer edge of the hull, providing diners with spectacular starscapes as they ate. Nobody tried to stop them along their way, confirming that they were probably free to roam around the station somewhat without drawing the ire of Bondress. They were seated at a table in the lounge, and the two biological beings ordered drinks. All three settled in to watch the ebb and flow of the crowd and wait for their host. The flurry of activity near the entrance was their first indication that the main event was about to kick off. Some oversized aliens of a species Jason had not yet seen led the way in. Obviously, point security, by the way they scanned the crowd. A couple of underlings walked in, and then Bondress appeared, all smiles and waves to the crowd, his shimmering black suit complementing his olive-green skin. He spotted the gunship crew and waved like they were old friends, making several patrons look at the trio with new interest.
"Boys," he boomed, "starting without me? Let's all grab another drink before we head to our table."
While his demeanor was bombastic and friendly, Jason could see through the act. It was more for the benefit of the other patrons in the lounge than to put them at ease. In a short while after Bondress's arrival, they were shown to their table. Only the boss and his right-hand man joined them. The rest of the entourage mingled around in the lounge or posted up discreetly at the entrance. Once they had all ordered, Jason, with the help of Dietz, things turned to business.
"I don't always give my contractors the royal treatment like this," Bondress started, taking a sip of what looked like a dark red wine. "But you've proven that you're able to overcome adversity and still remember who it is you work for. Frankly, I was surprised when you showed back up with my cargo completely intact. We've tested it, and it wasn't tampered with in the least."
Jason could tell they were on dangerous ground. He hoped Twingo would just keep his mouth shut, and Dietz would find a graceful way to get them out of any future obligations to this guy.
"What I was equally surprised at, Dietz, was the complete crew change. Not that I was especially partial to Klegsch. It was the ship I was hiring. But for a synth, you've shown a remarkable self-preservation instinct and uncommonly good sense. No offense intended."
"None taken, sir. And I thank you for the compliment. Of course, it goes without saying that it never crossed my mind to try and cross you," Dietz said.
Bondress looked unimpressed with the synth's boot-licking.
"Of course. Which brings me to the main point, as it were."
Bondress leaned back and took another drink.
"I have an opportunity for you to make some serious cash for not a lot of work."
"I'm listening," Dietz said eagerly.
"I need some cargo and personnel moved fairly quickly from this station to another location, not on a planet. My ships are too well known to be able to slip out of here without someone observing. But your vessel is virtually anonymous, save for that action on Breaker's World. You could get out of here with minimal effort and be done with the job within a matter of days, paid, and on your way."
"That sounds extremely generous, sir. Do you think it'd be possible for me to discuss this with my crew and give you an answer?"
Dietz's answer completely took Jason by surprise. He assumed that the synth would jump at the chance of another job, and Jason and Twingo would be the ones trying to convince him to walk away. Something had changed, and he didn't know what it was.
"I suppose," Bondress said, shifting irritably in his seat. "You should know. I would like to use you and your crew again. But all I really need is the ship. A DL-7 isn't that difficult to pilot."
"There it is, the offer we can't refuse." "We'll take the job," Jason heard himself saying. Bondress leaned back and smiled. Dietz looked at him sharply, and Twingo looked ready to faint.
"Well, Commander Burke, that makes me very happy," Bondress said. "Smart move. Of course, your crew is only three people,
Not nearly enough to manage that big gunship. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'm going to provide some of my own personnel to make sure the delivery goes smoothly. It's the least I can do.
I'll bet.
Once back in the suite, Jason had to fend off two very irate beings.
Why the hell did you jump in back there?
Dietz seemed more upset that Jason had usurped his authority than at the prospect of working for Bondress again.
We were supposed to be getting out of here. I want to leave.
Twingo's reaction was fear-driven and understandable. Jason was in no mood to coddle him, though. He wanted to be done with this as much as anyone. He also wanted to be done with all the arguments about it.
If you'd both shut the hell up, I'll tell you,
Jason yelled, his tone renouncing any argument.
You both heard him. He said all he needed was the ship. That was a direct threat. He'll take that gunship parked down in the hangar. And when he does, what do you think our life expectancy looks like? You think we'll be allowed to just run out the clock in this luxury suite on his dime? We'll be dead before they even finish loading the cargo.
They stared at him, silently, contemplating what he had just said.
You're right, Twingo said softly. We'll never be allowed to leave here alive unless we play his game.
He blew his breath out noisily.
What do I care? I'm a wanted man on my home planet, which isn't even really my home planet. I've no one to care for or to care about me, and I don't want to die here on this station. I guess I'm in for now.
I don't disagree with you, but these things are usually handled with a little more finesse,
Dietz conceded.
Since you've locked us into this deal without discussing terms, we're obligated to do this for whatever price he may set.
Jason looked at him with disgust. Dietz, I'm not trying to get more money out of him. I'm trying to survive long enough to see Earth once more. The crew of the gunship was back down in the hangar deck bright and early, at least according to ship's time, watching the last of the cargo get moved up into the hold and secured. Towards the end of the loading, Bondress made an appearance, looking as polished as ever. He was trailed by a handful of aliens that were dressed in utilitarian coveralls, almost like flight suits, which were undoubtedly their supplemental crew members.
"Looks like we're about ready," the crime boss beamed. "Let me introduce you to the specialist you'll be taking with you. This is Dr. Jorvan Mafredich. He'll be monitoring the cargo and disembarking once you reach your destination."
Jason nodded politely to the doctor, who looked like he may have been the same species as Twingo, and was rewarded with an openly hostile glare that startled him.
"Are we about ready to launch?" Bondress asked.
"Yes, once your personnel are on board, we can shove off."
Bondress cocked his head slightly as if trying to decipher the expression. After a split second, his implants provided him with his species equivalent to the nautical term shove off, and he smiled.
"So, how is it you're still using that old cheap translator?"
"Never mind," cutting Jason off before he could answer. Bondress motioned for one of his men. After a brief conversation, he straightened back up and yelled at the doctor.
"Mafredich! I'm sending for a full set of implants for Commander Burke. You will use this ship's medical facilities and install them."
The doctor looked positively enraged as he stared at Jason before stomping up the ramp. Bondress chuckled.
"Just a little parting gift for a job well done."
As Jason watched him walk off, he realized the implants weren't a gift. They were an insult aimed at the doctor. Apparently one of many, judging by the looks Mafredich had been giving. Sighing, Jason turned and followed everyone else up the ramp and into the gunship. The cargo bay was loaded with 28 tall, rectangular modules that were individually sealed to the deck. They looked to be about 1.5 meters by 1.5 meters and around 4 meters tall. All the containers were humming and had indicator panels that were scrolling information that Jason couldn't understand. He innocently asked the hired help next to him,
"So, what's in the crates?"
"Don't worry about it, and don't touch anything."
The flight-suited thug pushed by him and headed for the stairs that led to the interior of the ship. When Jason left the cargo bay himself, waiting to watch the ramp raise and lock to prevent any potential stowaways, he walked into the ship and felt a completely different vibe to it. The personality, or lack thereof, of Bondress's people aside, the ship didn't have the abandoned feel to it that he had gotten used to in recent weeks as the sole occupant. The three new security thugs, as Jason came to think of them, were sitting at the galley table, engrossed in a conversation amongst themselves. The doctor was sitting apart from them, staring down into a mug of something. He looked as dejected as anyone Jason had ever seen. Before he could initiate a conversation with him, Dietz's voice came over the ship intercom.
"We'll be launching in 5 minutes. There's no need to secure yourselves or other items since we'll just be sliding out of the hangar. Commander Burke, please report to the bridge."
"What's up?" Jason asked as he walked onto the bridge, nodding to Twingo as he passed.
"We're getting ready to launch. I'd rather have you up here in case our new passengers have a secondary agenda. We can close off the bridge if we need to, and evacuate the atmosphere out of the rest of the ship if it looks like they're here for something other than just to tend the cargo."
Jason was somewhat surprised that the synth seemed to have real concern for his well-being. "Thanks," he said simply, as he hopped into the co-pilot's seat. The DL-7's reactor was still coming up to nominal operating range when Dietz went ahead and lifted off from the hangar deck and used the maneuvering thrusters to nudge the gunship out through the force field and into open space. Once out, he sat back as the station's docking control system took over navigation and flew the ship away, allowing the station's orbital velocity to aid in increasing the distance between the two. It was nearly 5 minutes later when the displays indicated that the ship was free navigating, and Dietz was clear to bring the main propulsion online. The ship thrummed as power was fed to the grav emitters, and they banked onto a course that would lead them directly out of the system. He began entering information into the navigation system and said idly to Jason,
"We're going to make a couple of dummy jumps in case we're tracked out of the system." Bondress was right. The ship doesn't have much notoriety and has never been publicly contracted by him, so it's not likely anyone will follow. "We'll jump once and then send the maintenance bots out to check the hull for trackers, and then make a couple